Okay, we're going to bring the Agriculture, Environment, Natural Resources Finance Committee to order. And welcome. This is going to be a very interesting year for us. We have not only the environmental finance area that I've been used to in the past, but now we also have the agricultural area of responsibility. Many of those issues used to go through the same committees, or the we ended up in the same conference committees, and so we worked on these issues together. But now to have them combined, I think will be very interesting, and I think helpful in the overall process. It certainly helped us match up with the Senate. They have agriculture and environment, natural resources all together over there. And then what I'd like to do this morning is for us to first start off with introductions. And I think we'll just kind of start at one end of the table and kind of move around, and we'll have first we'll go with members, and then we'll go with staff. And why don't we start off with Sheldon? You want to introduce
yourself? I'm Sheldon Johnson, and I'm from Southeast St. Paul. Can you give us an idea where I live?
I'm representative.
Well, if you have issues that you're interested in, or things that you'd like to see us work on this year, advice, what do you might want to mention that to?
Okay. Well, I will give that one some thought. Nothing comes right off the top of my head, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Aaron Peterson. I have to say that now because there's three Petersons. And I'm happy to be on this committee. Extremely pleased to be on the committee, actually. And I represent five counties in, southwestern Minnesota relative to David Dill's perspective, but west central, southwestern, and represent three of the major watershed divides in the state of Minnesota in my legislative district. And it's such that hunting and fishing is very important, but it seems to be lagging. I'd like to look at changing the management of the goose season at Lac La Parle Goose Refuge, which has international implications with the Canadian government as well, with flyway protection, and trail development in the upper Minnesota River Valley is important to become a destination. And also this clean water legacy bill idea that people have, that where you were speaking at last night, that I think I need some more detail on that. And I don't know if you've got it planned, but I think Bill Hunt from NRCS would be able to explain to a lot of these groups and members, frankly, the difference between federal conservation programs and state-run conservation programs, and this belief that just because you have a state program means you're going to leverage more federal money. I mean, the federal money's coming already. So I think there needs to be some education to a lot of members on the difference between the feds and the states on that that bill idea itself. And past that, I was able to work on the first Minnesota CREP when I was a staffer for David Mingy, and I think I know the difference between federal, state, and local applications of conservation. And I grew up on a farm and would like to keep growing biodiesel, ethanol, and all ag-based fuels. Thanks.
I'm
going to pull the mic over to her.
You're always going to say that. From South Minneapolis, and I know that we have lots of water issues that are facing Minnesota, not just the surface water issues, but groundwater issues. I hope we can find some bipartisan way to wrestle these things to the ground. I think that's possible. I don't know that I'm hopeful, but I think it's certainly possible.
I'm Al Jenke, in my fifth term from Wilmer, Candiota County. I think, like a lot of members here, agriculture is probably our top issue. 40% of our economy is agriculture in western Minnesota, and that's a big deal. As far as the environmental side of it, though, I'd like to see some discussion, Mr. Chair, on some of the specialty accounts within the department, particularly I'm thinking of like the federal license monies that come back and some of that, that there's some little programs out there and things that I've got some ideas for some of that money. So hopefully we can review that intensely as we go forward.
David Dill, live in Crane Lake on the Canadian border, represent St. Louis Lake and Cook County, which could be easily or just more easily described as the Minnesota Arrowhead. our district up there in the Northeast thrives on agriculture, environment, natural resource management. It's almost our entire economy. This committee is a good fit for me, good fit for the district. Thank you for having the opportunity to serve on this committee again.
Very good. Dean, would you like to start?
I'm Dean Erdahl, in my second term. Represent 18B, which is most of Meek County and six townships in western Wright County. Certainly concerned about water issues. A particular interest to me in the last session was some dairy legislation, which will be coming forward again this term. I represent one of the areas that represents Litchfield, which contains First District Association, which is one of the largest cheese processors in the world, 8 million slices every day in Litchfield, and so it's a major interest of mine, and look forward to working on these and other issues with members of the committee.
I'm Representative Tony Cornish from Good Thunder, Faribault County, Waseca County, and Blue Earth County, south of Mankato area, bordering Iowa. And I have a list. Some of my concerns are buffer zones, filter strips, and what will make Maxine happy, buying more public land. And
started already.
And in balancing those needs against ags, I know the ag community is going to have something coming called no net loss of ag lands. And so balancing that between the need for buffer zones, filter strips, and more wildlife lands, more ducks, an understandable synopsis. And then the last thing is, I'm kind of worried about one thing, is that we don't have a knee-jerk reaction to this Wisconsin shooting incident and try to over-regulate and beef up our trespass laws and thinking that control is the way to go at this with a lot of regulations. So I'll be watching that. It's one of the things that's come about.
I'm Acting Pennis. I represent four counties in northwest Minnesota. My counterpart is Bernie Leader. And I have to just say I was in Florida at the time of the shooting, and before I heard where it was, I thought it probably was in Kitson County. I'm glad to be on this committee. We have an immense amount of state land up there. I am surprised that in the glossary of acronyms, I do not see any of the acronyms for DNR that I hear every day. I am a farmer, and so
you and Moss.
I'm a farmer and former biology, chemistry, physics teacher, and so even though others don't think I fit here, I do.
I'm Joe Hoppe from Chaska.
Sorry, Joe Hoppe from Chaska, the eastern part of Carver County, and I've got issues.
Mr. Chairman, I'll second that. We can second it.
It is an issue.
He is an issue. I'm Representative Doug Magnus. I represent the southwest corner of the state, the four counties that make up the southwest corner. Jokingly, I say I represent the northeast suburbs of Sioux Falls because we get all our TV and all our media stuff out of Sioux Falls. Nobody knows what's going on up here, so that's a tremendous benefit for me a lot of times. But I'm a farmer. I grew up on a farm there and farmed all my life there and have worked a lot in agriculture and commodity organizations. Certainly very interested in agriculture. Probably a little known fact, Mr. Chairman and members, is that I did serve two terms on the Environmental Quality Board in the 90s. So I do have a little bit of interest in that. And along with Representative Peterson,
We have the preponderance of wind energy development in our districts, and so probably we'll be talking about that a little bit too, maybe. Thank you for the opportunity to serve with you, Mr. Chairman. Looking forward to it.
Glad to have you here. Let's have staff introduce themselves also. John, why don't we start with you?
Sure. John Helen, I'm with the House Research Department. I'm here to help on issues and drafting legislation, and basically I'll be here for meetings involving the LCMR, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I look forward to working with all the members of the committee.
I'm Bob Eliff, also from House Research. You've been a triple threat this year. The issues I'm responsible for are air pollution, solid waste, hazardous waste, and nuclear waste. And I look forward to working with all the members of the committee.
Sam Rankin, the third of three of us from House Research. I also staff the Agriculture Policy Committee, so I'll see some of you there. Been serving in this position for 30 years now, and happy to see you here, and hope we can have a good session together.
My name is David Musilevich. I work for House DFL Research, and I'm glad to be here.
I'm Ed Warner, GOP Research, entering my biennium.
So Rebecca Loudon, Ms. Blaze from Ag Policy, and I'm the Committee Legislative Assistant.
My name is Marilyn Brick. I'm Committee Administrator for the committee, and just happy to help this committee run in any orderly way it possibly can. And just to give you a little bit of background for you ag folks that might be suspicious of us environmental folks, I did work for the Commissioner of Agriculture for several years in the 90s.
Well, it's my turn. Dennis Osment, my legislative district is Rosemount, Eastern Apple Valley, so it's now kind of a suburban area. I've lived in the same house all my life, and I used to live way out in the country. And so as I've watched, all my neighbors who used to be all farmers kind of disappear, and the landscape change, it's now mostly industrial around me. I live right over by Pine Bend Industrial, or the what they now call Flint Hills Resources. So the oil refinery is my closest neighbor, and the homes are coming in from the west at a significant pace, and I believe I have about five crop farmers left, and livestock I think I'm down to two. And so it's really that's in my district, because it's Rosemount is really the only agricultural area at all. Apple Valley doesn't have any agriculture left. And so many of the issues that you will be talking about are things that are very close to my heart, even though they may not be any longer in my district. My legislative district used to take in all rural area of Dakota County down into Goodhue County, which is Cannon Falls. And so very familiar with those issues. Also very interested in environmental issues. When I first was elected to the legislature in 1984, the first issue that we were dealing with was groundwater contamination. And it was coming from the University of Minnesota properties, which is just to the south of my home. And we had a significant amount of pollution that was coming off of that university property. It seemed back in the 60s, 50s and 60s, they would take the chemicals from University of Minnesota hospitals and their schools, also schools around the state of Minnesota, and for what we considered at that time proper disposal, they would take it out to the university property, dump the chemicals into a concrete pit that's out there and burn them. And of course, they went through the concrete and into the ground and had a tremendous amount of contamination. Ended up with that big plume as it went towards the Mississippi River underground, that my home was right in the middle of the plume. So I used to stay in Representative Guineas would remember possibly on the floor of the house, he said, I showered in seven chemicals plus water this morning. We got to do something about this pollution issue. So it does bring it home to you, the fact that we have to be very conscientious with and with our resources, to recognize how fragile they are. And that also is, that needs to be combined with our economy and what we need to do in order to make our, continue to make our state prosperous and to keep people wanting to be here and to let them grow, and for us all to kind of work together. So it's a real challenge for us to have responsibilities that will be before this committee, which is significant agricultural issues and economic issues surrounding that activity, and the environmental protection, which also is a very significant economic issue, because if it wasn't for the quality of life that we have here in the state of Minnesota, I don't believe we'd have the tax base that we currently enjoy. I don't think we'd have the level of life that we currently enjoy. So our surroundings and our environment is very much our responsibility, and to try and not only maintain what we have, but to try and gain back whatever we can reasonably do. Along that line, I do want to bring to your attention what I believe is going to be the biggest issue that we'll be dealing with this year, and that will be the impaired waters issue. And for those of you that may not know all the implications of that, we'll be having several different opportunities for people of, with significant expertise to come in and try and explain to us as to their points of view as to how it's impacting. But basically, in a nutshell, it's a federal mandated program that comes out of 1972 Clean Water Act. It's been around for a long time. It says that all the states in this country need to be examining their water conditions, whether they're surface waters and or groundwaters. They need to be identifying the impairments. The impairments are items or materials in the water that is inconsistent with the use of that water. So if it's a supposed to be a swimmable water, or if it's supposed to be drinkable water, or whatever, those, there's maybe impairments that prevent that from actually being done safely. And so therefore the federal government says we're to identify those impairments, then we're supposed to put together in the evaluation, come up with what they call total maximum daily loads of the different impairments or the different negative components that may be in that water, and then we're to come up with a plan as to how we're to resolve those issues. And if we don't do that, if we decide that we're going to neglect it, or to, this is just another federal mandate that we're going to try to avoid, I believe that the federal government will be following up with us the way they did with the Clean Water or Clean Air Act, and threatening sanctions and actually putting some sanctions in place with regard to the permitting processes that industry goes through, that development goes through. Anyone that wants to expand and needs a permit will have significant negative impacts and their ability to get those permits. The red tape starts to pile up and it becomes very, very costly in order to do quite simple things when you don't comply with federal law. We experienced that with the Clean Air Act. Many of you may recall that there was a time when we had the exhaust emissions had to be tested in every car to make sure that it was those cars were kept up with regard to their air emission qualities. And if you didn't have your car kept up, you'd have to make that correction. That program was a result of the mandates of the federal government. And let me just give you a quick snapshot of how ridiculous things can get, in my opinion, when the federal government starts to take over and force you to do things. That clean air provision with the automobile exhaust or emissions tests exempted the older cars. If you had an old car, you didn't have to get your car tested. If you had a new car, that's what you had to get tested. Now, common sense tells me it was the old cars that were causing significant problem, not necessarily the new cars. So what we had is a program that was put in place to get the federal government off our back, not necessarily one that was really targeted at cleaning up our air. And fortunately, we have been able to, through other mechanisms, be able to get the air cleaner, get that particular provision off the backs of the people of the state of Minnesota. But we have to emphasize that we need to maintain our clean air and work at it constantly, or we are can be subject to some of those same penalties and provisions again. This is true with our water. we have to be proactive and start getting going on the continued testing and identification of our impaired waters. I was at a meeting last week, program one that I'm hoping that we'll have in here. It was actually presented by MnDOT to some engineers, and they MnDOT was explaining the impaired waters program to them. And it's a two-hour program. I think it does a very good job of explaining impaired waters issues to the bureaucracies around the state of Minnesota. And letting them know that it's something they need to be paying attention to and they need to be incorporating into their current projects. For example, if you had a street project, your chances are you're impacting a lot of water. Those streets are like dikes running all over, and they gather the water up in ditches, and it may not be the engineer's problem with regard to the impairments that may be in that water, but if they have a watershed district or a city or a county that does have water bodies that have impairments that they have to take care of, they got some contaminants that are coming off or some problems that need to be addressed, that maybe in the engineering of that street or road, they could help take care of some of those problems, especially in their holding pond issues and so forth. And so at the beginning of the program, and I mentioned this last night to one of the, we were at the Environmental Partnership program, that at the beginning of the two-hour session, we had the engineers really saying, why do we have to do this? It really seems that the problem is that the MPCA is identifying too many impaired waters, and that's the issue. And by the end of the program, and they've got to understand that, you know, if you start to work together, you not only be able to make put in your holding ponds that you need for water flow conditions, but if you do it in such a way that you can help out with some of the water impairments, maybe some filtration activities and so forth along with that, that there may be others that would help you pay for your holding pond, because it becomes cost-effective for people to work together. Instead of everybody operating in isolation, let's kind of work together. Well, then the question came up, well, how do you do that? Because you need to know what it is that you're going to have that you need to try and reduce in the way of impairments. So the discussion kind of turned around in the fact that you don't know what those impairments may be, because we've only tested or evaluated about 8% of our waters in the state of Minnesota. We're finding 40% of those impaired, but there's a very small amount of measurement has actually been taken place so far. So then they were saying that you really have to kind of guess at what those impairments may be. So if you have projects today, you can try to be working on them. Because you know what this impaired water program? If we neglect to take care of the impairments that we can today in a costly fashion while we have assistance of federal funds, if you're building a road or whatever it may be, then you pass that opportunity up. And the impairment is actually identified 10 years from now. This is retroactive. It goes backwards. You're going to have to get it corrected. You're not going to be able to walk away from this. We have to start working on these things now, or it's going to come back and bite you. And so then the engineer started understanding the implications of this federal law that's been around for a long time. Their statement was, well, we need to have our waters tested faster. We need to have the MPCA out there identifying these impairments so we know how to engineer them out. If we have impact with water, we can then start to see what has been the impairments in that particular watershed that need to be addressed, and see if something that we're doing could help in that area. It made sense to them, but they can't do it without having the data. They need to know what it is that needs to be corrected before they can engineer out or help the engineer out that problem. And so they went in their program from originally starting out saying, we know too much, that's what the problem is, that's the reason why we be told we have to clean up these waters, where they went and said to the point that, no, we need to know more so that we can be proactive today and be spending our current dollars wisely so that we can reduce issues that we can become aware of now that can fit into our current programs, because if we leave them go, someday it's going to be extremely costly with no assistance from other people to try and fix these things. And so it's that type of concern that has really gotten my attention, and that this is an issue that just like when we're talking about shorelines along lakes and rivers, as you we go forward with the committee action, you'll know that you'll find there's a lot of people that want to, especially in policy committees, those that sit on environmental policy, we'll find that there will be those that want to have more of a statewide program with regard to shoreline protection. And I believe that this impaired waters program is such that if we don't start to be proactive on some of these things, that you're going to find is the more impervious surfaces that we keep putting alongside our water, whether it be lakes, streams, or rivers, that we are going to find that that impervious surface is going to be, is pushing contaminants into the water system without any filtration. That someday those impairments, as they're identified, the federal government's going to say, and or the plan, and the plans will hopefully, if they stay underneath our jurisdiction, will be done at a local level. So it'll be people coming together saying, here's the impairment, what do we do? Watershed districts and the environmental groups from different counties and so forth will be coming together and say, what we really need to do is take this action or that action, and it's going to be retroactive on those shorelines. And people that have things in place and said, but it's been there for decades, they're going to find out it's going to have to be removed. That's going to come as a horrible shock to them. And you know who they're going to have to blame for if it happens from the future, from this point on? Those of us that said that what we're going to try to do is ignore the federal law. We're going to try to get around it in some way, shape, or form. You're not going to get around this one, I don't think. I don't know of any politician, statewide or nationally, that's going to campaign on reducing the protection of waters. And that's what you'd have to do if you wanted to change the Clean Water Act. You'd have to nationally campaign against protecting water. I don't see that happening. Therefore, I think it's something we need to really be proactive on and maintain some common sense in the whole overall issue. Because right now it's underneath our control. The experience has been that when it's underneath state control, that local participation, citizen participation is very high in trying to resolve the problems and come up with reasonable and logical implications and technologies, changes in projects that make sense and they're affordable. When it goes into, if we would ignore these things, and the environmental communities and or any citizen, doesn't take an environmental community, it can be any citizen according to the Clean Water Act, can file a lawsuit against any project that's in a district that has an impaired water. And they can bring that project to a halt, and they have in the country, in this country, and many projects in many other states. There are some lawsuits going on in this state right now. Many of them are with wastewater treatment facilities and trying to expand those facilities. And as those lawsuits come forward, as they win, and the history is that they're winning big, very few of them are losing. As they win, the issue then goes into the courts. It's taken away from the state. The court directs the EPA to find the answers. And as the EPA comes in to find the answers, they do a fast job, has very little local participation or citizen involvement. It becomes very bureaucratic, so I'm told. And it becomes costly because they start spending a lot of money for court or for lawyers and trying to negotiate these things out, as well as the research and that goes behind it. And then, as the issue tries to get resolved and get actually the implementation on the ground, they send the state the bill, and you pay for it. And if you say, no, I'm not going to pay for it, then you stop your federal funds coming to your state, and you stop the permits from being issued in your state. We're behind an eight ball that we have to find some answers to. I think for us to be very proactive on this issue is in the best interest of the state of Minnesota citizens. It's in our best interest to try and work together along that line of working together. I am very pleased and excited that we have Representative David Dill as our vice chair. David has I've worked with him on several issues last year, past 2 years, And I think that you'll find him to be very knowledgeable, very common sense individual that will help us in our overall leadership. I've met with Representative Dill, and we have I've made commitments to him that this will be a partnership, that we will be working together, and that this will be shared responsibilities as to where we're going. We are, I believe, have some wonderful potential opportunities for us to move forward this year, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm very excited about it. Another issue that we're going to be dealing with that we will be the electronic recycling efforts. We'll have to see what comes out of policy committee on that issue, but I believe at some point in time it will be before us. As we are going forward with many of these different issues, we have some from agriculture, I think, that will be potentially coming through policy that will end up here in the finance area. The one of the things that seems to be a little different this year is that as they put together the committees, they didn't seem to, at least in our case, did not necessarily have our members tracking the policy or connecting the policy and the finance together. I believe we have some members that serve on environmental policy and some members that serve on agricultural policy. We have some members that serve on neither, and yet we're here in the Agricultural and Environmental Finance Committee. And so every issue that is going to come before us, we're going to have to take extra time to try and get everyone up to speed, because those that sit on the environmental policy will have the heads up and knowledge of some of those issues that are coming out of that committee to us first. As in the past we've done is had our said members attend your policy committee meetings, so when the issues get in our court, we know what's going on. Well, now we've got people that are not on ag policy or not on environmental policy, but yet those issues are all going to come to us. So we're going to have to try and cover those issues adequately so that you'll have the background to make knowledgeable and quality decisions. And so that's going to be more time. We're going to have to take more time this year, and we'll be spending more time in committee than we have in the past. So I have asked, I'm serving on environmental policy. They did not have me on agricultural policy. They do not have the chair of agriculture serving on this committee. I thought that was very unusual. In my discussions about that, I was able to get assigned to the Agricultural Policy Committee as an ex-official member. I didn't need a vote. I don't need a vote there. I can vote here. But I do need to be at the table where I can ask questions and become knowledgeable in it if it's going to come before us. I would encourage each and every one of us to, as much time as you can find, to be able to spend, at least watch the agendas. And we request to have everyone put on the agendas of the two policy committees, so that as the policy committees, as you see, they have issues that may come up in the finance committee, that maybe you can attend those policy committee hearings and get some of that background information yourselves and listen to some of the questions that the members on those committees will be asking. Because a couple of things that I believe really lead us into quality decisions in the legislature. The number one is knowledge. This is the biggest educational institution that we have, in my opinion, in the state of Minnesota. I've learned more, and most members that come here, I believe, learn as much or more than they have in any of their educational institutions, because this usually gets applied almost instantly. So you not only get the lesson, you get to work on it right now. So knowledge is extremely important for us. The second one is, I think, is just as critical, is to get to know one another, and so we can be cooperative together and work together. And the way that happens the most is for us to have some trust for one another. And to me, if the more we can put on the table, the more we can stay away from politics in our areas. There's not a lot of Republicanism or Democrat issues involved the environment when we're talking about environmental protection. And so let our philosophies come into play appropriately and have our differences, but let's do it right on the table. Let's do it so we all know what's going on, and let's try to work together. As we're building that trust, I also know that to find quality answers to issues, we need to identify the problems and have agreement on what it is we're working on. Because if we have people around this table that have very different viewpoints, and if we're all working on the same problem in word only, not actually what is the real problem we're trying to resolve, we come up with solutions that don't match up, and then they just keep banging them against each other. Let's look at the issues, try to identify and acknowledge the problems that we are going to work on, because there are lots of problems you can find out there. It's easy to find the problem. It's tough to find the solutions. The solutions mean that we need to work together, and we need to be as open and as trusting as possible. And I'm hopeful that we'll make some real progress. I have some other issues that or items that I want to mention. Because I've kind of expounded a little bit on committee activity, I'd like to go back to the members right now and see if you have any additional comments that you'd like to make, or disagreements that you may have, or other things to be on the table, because I really think the more we understand about each other and kind of where we're coming from, not only from a district basis but politically, I think that it will be helpful as to when we get down the road. Getting to know each other is very important. Who would like to hear? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I just wanted to say, thinking about the question of interest that representatives had, meeting with my constituents, I think a couple things that stand out is forest protection. We have a lot of woods in my neighborhood that we're interested in, make sure it stays healthy. And then the water quality issues that you talked about, both watershed, rivers, and streams, are really pronounced issues that I'd like to stay focused on.
Representative Johnson and I served on as co-chairs on the Great Mississippi River Cleanup project, so that was really a good time. We got to get 92 tons 1 year. What is the second year? 23?
Yes, that's right.
Like that. Mm-hmm. It was a significant effort, and it really will pay off long term. Anyone else? Representative Wiginius.
One of the things that I think might be helpful for us in trying to find this common ground is we may have to think about spending more than the normal amount of time establishing a fact base so we all agree on the facts of an issue. And I'm already thinking it's going to take us more time because we have these two bodies of knowledge that we're going to have to pull together. And all of this federal law, it seems like it's going to be very time-consuming, and I hope we can make sure we get lots of opportunities to get all sorts of people to give us hard facts.
Good point. Anyone else? Yeah, we're going to get to them. We will leave no one out. Any other comments that members may have? President Cornish?
I apologize for reading some policy into it. When I'm looking back over my list, I realize that some of those were policy things, but I have a passion for them that I couldn't wait until I got to the policy.
Well, you'll find that there's many policy issues end up here, but we will be trying to hold those policy issues to be issues that have economic impact or budget impact. Everything's open when you kind of are looking at germaneness as far as committee action, so it'll be up to the members of the committee as to what's in, what's out. But I would hope we'd try to keep it as close as reasonable and logical to what is our duty of this committee, and that's the finance area. Yeah. Other comments or questions? Okay. I'd like to also introduce or have him himself introduce our committee page.
I'm Arlen Restad. This is my fourth year working over at the Capitol on a temporary basis. I work as a chamber guard during session. Make sure the doors get open and closed for you gentlemen and ladies. That's an honor and a privilege. And we work with the sergeant's office and various other activities and projects besides filling in this committee page. And I'm looking forward to working with this group. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for being here. The I think that what I'd like to do now is to acquaint you with some of the materials that you have in front of you. First of all, the folder contains information, will contain information for the current meeting, and the folder is also to keep information if you want saved. I believe there's also, you'll see there's two folders inside, and one says today's meeting and the other says information to be saved. If you put it inside that saved folder, it will stay there. If you leave it lay on the table, it's going to be gone. We're going to recycle it. So it's make sure that as you get up to go out of the room, if there's a possibility you won't be coming back, to make sure you have your items in the safe portion of your folder if you want to keep it. We do not have any committee rules at this time. The only thing that is extremely important to the committee for operation is that we give our staff adequate time to be able to adjust to the needs of the committee. That means getting materials copied and ready and available for us, have it in our folders. And so to make sure if that happens, we want to have our amendments in before the day before the committee's meeting, before they're going to be introduced. And any handouts that you have or anything you want inserted in our folders, please try and get them to our staff, Marilyn or Rebecca, before the day before, the afternoon before. And I try to be as loose as possible on with regard to committee amendments. For many years, I served in the minority. And without the opportunity to bring amendments, it would be very difficult for the minority to be able to have their chances to be involved in some of the actions that you are there, that the committee is going to take. And so I really try to be open and allowing for enough time. But if we get deluged with a lot of amendments at the last moment and so forth, it's just trying to basically understand what the amendments are going to do or implications. And I don't want to see any of us blindsided by issues. I want to try and get as much knowledge as possible. By having amendments and issues coming in the day before, not only gives our committee staff time to be able to deal with those, get them copied, get them put in place, but they're also available then for every member that wants to see what's coming up the next day. You want to take a look and see what the amendments are going to be that's coming up the next day or potentially going to be addressed, then that gives you the opportunity to do that. Some things, though, are not anticipated. There's some things when you get in testimony, you got the bill before you, things are going to happen, and amendments are just going to kind of come out of the air. And those issues are got to come forward. I don't try to stifle those off or say, yeah, well, you haven't met a deadline, therefore we can't do it. Otherwise, I think we really cut down on our ability to be creative and to do the best job possible. So we just kind of trust that nobody's going to abuse that by taking advantage of it, making politics out of those issues that can be used for embarrassment of individual members or votes or things of that nature. Legitimate issues, we differ. Those are what elections are all about. So when you differ opinions, that's fine, but try to keep away from the sucker punches. That really doesn't help us in building trust. That's both sides. I will do my best to try and make sure that the majority does not do that and appreciate consideration for the minority on that. The next several days, we will hear from agencies under our jurisdiction. This week, we will hear from the Board of Soil and Water and Soil Resources, Bowser, the DNR, the MPCA, and the Office of Environmental Assistance. And they're going to give us just quick overviews, not an in-depth evaluation of, but just kind of get you familiar with what they're all about and what they're involved with. Next week, we will not meet on Tuesday in order to allow for members to travel to Rochester for the Governor's State of the State address. On Wednesday, the 19th, we've made plans to meet at the Minnesota Zoo in Apple Valley. That comes under our jurisdiction. It'll be for a brief overview followed by a short tour of the facility. Those who do not have to be back at 10:15 meeting, for a 10:15 meeting, can plan to stay at the zoo for a longer period of time. So you get it, because it is a pretty good sized place and you really need some time to take a look at it. So hopefully we'll have the whole morning to be able to do that for most members. But we do know some, one or two have potential obligations at another committee. We will plan to begin our meeting early that day at 7:45 a.m. instead of 8:15 at the zoo, so we'll get you directions along with the meeting notice. For those of you who would like to carpool from the state office building, if you just ask or contact Rebecca and let her know that you're interested in carpooling so that we can try to arrange for that. And there's some of us that would be very happy to provide transportation so we can all kind of hold down on the travel as much as possible. Same time, the flexibility is there for you to go on your own if you choose. On Thursday, January 20th, we'll plan to meet at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and have a briefing from the department and the Board of Animal Health and perhaps a short tour of the department. We're having the most of the agencies come in here and give us a review, but the Department of Ag, we felt it would be best if we went out to their facility, and so they're going to be moving into a new facility, so you can kind of see what their conditions are in this one and where they are. At some other point in time, take a look. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to look at where they're going to be going. If you're not too tired of going on tours by that time, the week of January 24th, I'd like to take the committee out to the DNR, PCA, and OEA building. It's all one facility, and Bowser's going to be in that same structure, so it really give you a chance to just kind of take a look at their facilities. But it'll be a very quick tour because in just one two-hour space of time that we'd take a look at that, because most of their reviews would come here. And then also we'd like to take you out to the Science Museum. Science Museum is under our budget, and we'd like to give you a chance to kind of see what that's all about. Many people, and unless you've had a chance to really be there and kind of see what's involved, you can have misconceptions because it is kind of a quasi-governmental supported activity. They're a nonprofit organization. They're on their own. We do try to give them a little bit of financial assistance. Unlike the zoo is actually a government agency that is operates and is the full responsibility of government that brings in private money to try and augment its system. The Science Museum is kind of the opposite. It's a nonprofit that the government tries to help out with. Except St. Paul. We've never been able to get St. Paul involved in Ramsey County. We'd love to get them involved or helping out over there, too. So are there any questions that members have right now? And then we're going to introduce you to Mr. Reinholdt. Well, Tom, would you, or Representative Hackworth, would you introduce yourself and kind of talk about any issues that you may have or ideas that you think will come up before this committee?
Representative Tom Hackworth, I represent Northern Anoka County and the City of Elk River in Sherburne County, District 48A, Chair of the Environment Policy Committee. And, I just haven't thought about what might be coming before the committee. I might have a couple of bonding proposals, but other than that, I hope we can get this budget straightened out and hope we can hold our own in the Environment Finance Committee this year, Ag and Environment Finance. Hopefully we're not cut like so many others have been.
I think that's critical for us to take on that theme because we have had some significant reductions. Ag has had some of the biggest reductions in the past. I think we need to really be ready to fight for our issues this year. And where it takes money to support those issues, we need to make sure we weigh in on it. Without any, is there anything else to come that people have right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say, putting everything on the table, I find it offensive that Representative Magnus told me he'd give me a one-way ride to the zoo.
You're better off not replying.
I'm glad we've got a buffer zone between Representative Hockey's the buffer zone between them.
I think you'll find out that's inadequate.
There you go.
Yeah. What I'd like to do now is to introduce you to Jim Reinholdt. tell you about himself here a little bit, but I'd like to just mention that all of our research staff is very, very important to us and has been just a tremendous help to make the committee activities in the past successful. But both agriculture and environment falls underneath the financial area, falls underneath Mr. Reinholz. And I've served in the legislature for 20 years, and I have not had the opportunity to really be on a finance committee before that was in the positions and responsibilities that I've had. I've been on the committees, but not in the area of responsibility. And I tell you, it's just fantastic to have the wealth of knowledge and professionalism that Mr. Reinholz brings to this committee. And I just want to start us off with everyone having confidence that the issues, the figures you're going to get will be the best quality figures that can be produced. That doesn't mean that glitches don't happen, but I haven't experienced one yet with Mr. Reinholz, but that potentially could happen. But it's he really helps us when we get information from those agencies and departments. He can really help us put, you know, some reality to it and get it to match up with what are the potential options that may be out there that may not be at full disclosure as committees talk to us, so, or as the administration talks to us. So with that, and I hope I haven't jinxed you, and but I would like you to introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Osmond. That was a wonderful introduction. I appreciate that. I'll just add for those members that don't know me well, I have worked at the legislature. This will be my 10th session, and all 10 of those I have had the responsibility of the Fiscal Analysis Department for Ag, Environment, and the Natural Resources area. So bringing Ag into this committee is back to where it was when I first started with the legislature, and it's a good fit very well. The issues overlap very often, and I think the Chairman Osmond mentioned that. They do have effects on each other. It's good sometimes to have them together, I believe, and will be good for the committee in this year, hopefully. Other than that, I just want to mention that I have, besides my experience at the legislature, I have worked in two state departments in the University of Minnesota, and so I have that viewpoint of both the executive branch and the legislative branch that I try to bring in the information I bring to you to help you make your decisions. I think that's valuable for fiscal analysts, and a lot of the analysts have worked both in the executive branch and the legislative branch and bring that sort of background to their information gathering in their jobs. So it usually is really helpful. I would ask you then, I did put together a few things, just some real brief background info, and if you would take the blue folder that I should be in your packet. I'm just going to walk through a couple things today. Chairman Osmond asked me to put together some real brief background on some of the issues, but not really the issues, but some of the areas of responsibility of the committee. I put also a few other things, and I always start out with somewhat of a background on the Fiscal Analysis Department. We're kind of a department. Some people, we work closely with committees, although we are a separate department. This House Research is a nonpartisan department in the House of Representatives. The statement on that you see on the first page really makes clear what our responsibilities are as the department tries to help the members make decisions, really, and primarily from a fiscal background. And we work very closely with House Research on putting together the information and putting together the bills and amendments. So feel free to come to me, and I will try to help you. If I can't, I'll refer you to the House Research people that have the areas of responsibility on this committee also, too, along with the partisan staff that do research. We typically work together as closely as we can. One thing I'd like to mention, Fiscal Analysis Department is, as I said, nonpartisan and confidential. Feel free to bring any questions you want to me. They never go beyond my office or without your, you know, your approval that I even consider bringing that to anybody else, that information. That's the way we always have worked, and I work that way, and hope that you'll utilize that as much as possible. The second page I just put in there is just a listing of the different analysts and where their areas that they cover are. It's just something that you may want to keep. Just some people, you obviously are on this committee and other committees, and if you have any questions, this just helps you know who it is you want to talk to. The third sheet I did put together, this is off the web page that we have as a department out on the House web page. It's some really good areas where you can get information if you want to have other more in-depth information on some of the topics, or and it shows you the web connections over to the Department of Finance and some non-state government ones also. If you're interested in anything, you can go out onto the department's web page on the House web and then go beyond it to some of those spots. The last one is just a listing of some of the publications that the fiscal staff put together over the years, each year, and it's obviously some of the most important ones are the tracking sheets that you will be working off of, making your decisions that I put together and that the bills are built off of are one of the primary pieces of information we put together. Money matters are you've certainly probably seen those are distributed. That are in more in-depth analysis of topics that analysts do. Issue briefs are real small ones that come up during session. People put out on things members are interested in. And then there's some archived documents out there on the web if you want to go back and look at them. Those are available, too. I just wanted to hand that out. A lot of people aren't, although there are no freshmen on this, a lot of members still aren't all that familiar with what the analysts in the fiscal analysis department do, so we usually try to hand that out. Next, and Representative Pennis, I do know those acronyms for the DNR also, but I didn't want to put them in paper. I used to, and I know some of those are, they are often... this is here because there's so much jargon in not just in government, but in the environmental area, and the agriculture area has its own also. Finance has their own. I really suggest you keep this as one of those items in your save folder, and as we are hearing testimony from people, you may hear them say things like, you know, Bowser, even Bowser. I mean, everybody probably knows what Bowser is by this time, but you'll hear people say, you know, BAS or AURI or something, and you could then turn to there and maybe hopefully find what it is they're talking about. It defines what some of the funds are. This committee works primarily or with non-general fund. There is a large number of revenue sources, fees, and funds, many of which are listed in here, giving you at least just brief information on where the source of those funds are. In most cases, and you'll find it'll be useful, I think, during the testimony that when people are before the committee. This is background material, and then I put together the third packet of stapled sheets is really some more, you know, direct information on the committee and its responsibilities. This now lists what we consider the accounts that this committee has jurisdiction over. Every year, the fiscal analysts work with the leadership of the House to divide out the areas of responsibility for the finance committees, primarily along the lines of the departments and the agencies. And you can see it's a relatively long list of agencies, starting with AURI, which is a very small organization. That one also is a quasi, it's a quasi-government organization, not really a state agency, but it's established in statute. The Ag Department obviously is a significant agency. The Animal Health Board is a small agency, but a very important agency for many members. Horticulture Society is no longer funded by the legislature, although it is still on, we're carrying it still on the list, and there's several of those because they, they're, they're still on the in statute as an organization, and there still is the potential for issues to come forth, and we wanted to deal with them beforehand so that we knew who had jurisdiction over them. Environmental Assistance Office obviously is in existence still as a separate agency. The Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources brings forth a significant dollar value of recommendations from the Environmental Trust Fund that this committee has jurisdiction over the decision on the spending on. Metropolitan Parks is here as a separate item. The committee has Metropolitan Parks obviously is its own local unit of government, part of the MIT Council. They have historically been funded by the legislature to some degree. That funding has come through this committee, both operating funding and capital funding will come through this committee. The Minnesota-Wisconsin Boundary Water Commission is no longer being funded by the state of Minnesota, and it really isn't an active organization at this point, although it was never removed from statute, so it really still is on here as a possible issue. Minnesota Conservation Corps, for those of you who may not be as familiar with that, this used to really be part of the DNR, this activity, and 2 years ago it kind of was separated out from the DNR. The Conservation Corps is an independent organization now, very small level of funding, but it does come through this organization. I'm sure we will be hearing from them on what they have done over the last couple of years as an independent group. The Minnesota Zoo, as Chairman Osmond indicated, is a state agency. Many people are not aware of that, especially people outside of state government really aren't aware of it. It is a state agency, although it does have an independent board, and the director of the zoo is not appointed by the governor. It is appointed by the board. It is really considered a state agency. The Natural Resources Department, obviously one of the larger state agencies, a cabinet-level agency, is in this area. So Pollution Control Agency, also a significant agency as far as dollars and impact around the state. Science Museum of Minnesota, it gets a relatively small subsidy from the state, and it is a private organization. Voyageurs National Park Council is no longer really an active organization either, and the Water and Soil Resources Board is another unusual organization in that it has an independent board. The director of the agency is appointed by that board, not by the governor, although the governor does have some authority in the establishment of the board. Those really are that's the listing of the agencies. And I said it's a relatively long list, some small, some large, a real varied group of agencies. If you turn to the next page, this is really a pie chart that, and it is more than just the department, or this committee, excuse me, jurisdiction, but I usually like to hand this out to people early in the year just so they see. You may have seen this if you're on Ways and Means in some of the presentations that have come up, but what it really shows is it's the current forecast. That's the forecast that came out the end of November of 2004 for the upcoming biennium that we're going to be dealing with, the 2006-2007 biennium, the general fund forecast. As you can see, it's just over $30 billion. This is showing where those resources are going to be going according to what is the forecast and the base budget amount. Just to show you where the big yellow one, obviously, K-12, as you would obviously, most of you probably would know, takes a large amount of the dollars. If you look where this committee fits in the general fund, you have to look over there on the very small slices of the pie. Ag is only 0.3% and environment 1.1% of the spending on the general fund, at least from the November forecast, which would be same level spending. The committee and the legislature this year obviously can make some changes in that. But that's just to put into context where general fund spending is on this committee. Obviously, the list before that shows it's a very complex area. Although the dollars are small, there are oftentimes very difficult decisions for the committee to make. The next chart, the one that says where the general resources come from, is just there for sort of background for you. Most people aren't completely aware of where the state gets its money. This is general fund dollars.
And you can see the big yellow areas, the individual income tax, is and has been for quite a while the largest source of funds for the state. The sales tax is about 30% right now. Is then the next really large amount, and then there comes a lot of relatively small ones. But the other is a lot of fees and various fees and reimbursements, and then corporate taxes at 4.7 is a relatively small source of funds currently for the general fund. A long list of real small ones over there on the left. You just go to the last page. It's really a small one-page spreadsheet where I took out the what I'm really doing here is taking that 1.1 and that 0.3% that was over on that pie chart and breaking it down into the counts, really showing you the dollar value of the both the general fund on the top half and all funds on the bottom half. And I wasn't going to point anything out other than you can see, obviously, huge variation going from the Natural Resources Department, which is over. Remember, these are three zeros behind them also, so they're over $200 million in general fund dollars. And when you combine both the opens and the direct appropriation amounts, down to the smallest ones, which, you know, the Conservation Corps at $700,000, very, very small appropriations. One thing I did want to point out, I said the top half of this shows the general fund amount. If you go way over to the very right column, halfway down, you see the total amount of general fund, at least in the forecast from November, is $417 million. If you go down then to the bottom half of that, where it's all funds, you see that it's $1.1 billion. So it puts in context, it's about 40% or so of the total funding in under the jurisdiction of this committee is general fund. The rest of it then is the various funds, the Ag Fund, the Game and Fish Fund, the Natural Resources Fund, or the in the PCA, the Environmental and Remediation Funds are large sources of expenditures for this committee. Mr. Chairman, that was I really was just going to do a very brief overview of the dollars and certainly would answer any questions that members have.
On the top half of that final sheet, it says Natural Resources Department, and it has in parentheses opens. If you could identify what the difference is on that.
Mr. Chairman and members, the general fund, and many of the funds have different designations on the appropriations. A direct appropriation is one that shows up in a bill and then into the law, and it's a decision made by the legislature for that biennium for a set certain amount of money. Also, in statute may also drive spending by language in the statute that is ongoing, and that creates what we call an open appropriation. With no action of the legislature, that expenditure continues onward. The large ones here in the Department of Natural Resources, an example of one anyway, is the emergency firefighting account. It is impossible for the legislature to know 2 years ahead of time how much money is going to be needed for emergency firefighting by the Department of Natural Resources. So what is established in the statute is their language that says an amount is appropriated from the general fund to the department to fight fires, and then there's a lot of details on what it can be used for. That is an open appropriation, and that is there without any action of the legislature. Every biennium it maintains there. The DNR has some appropriations that are open for firefighting, has appropriations that are open for treaty payments, and there are open appropriations in non-general fund money in the PCA for quite a few items too that the legislature has decided are important and ongoing, and usually what's common in them is the amount spent in a year is not really predictable very well, so guidelines are given and then they are allowed to spend money.
How many members, this is your first time on a finance committee? So everybody served on finance committees before. Is there the reason I was asking was because of the tracking sheets. Everyone's going to be familiar with the tracking sheets and the process. If you have any questions about any of that, make sure you get an opportunity to talk with Jim, because he'll give you a good background on how to deal with that, how to track things, and how he keeps account of what's been going on fiscally within the committee. So, thank you very much, Jim, for that overview. I really believe that Mr. Reinholz, I think that was very appropriate and very useful information. What I'd like to do now is ask those that are in the audience, especially the lobbyists, if you'd like to introduce yourselves to the committee members so they kind of know who you are and what areas you're tracking. I think that would be helpful, because there are members here that have been on ag that would know some of the agricultural lobbyists, or environment would know them, vice versa, but we need to get some cross-pollination going on here. So maybe if you'd like to take this opportunity to introduce yourselves to the committee. John, why don't we start with you?
I'm John Curry. I'm the legislative director for Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We will be interested in just about everything you folks work on. But we have a particular interest in creating some more up-to-date shoreline regulations, bonding for natural resource enhancements in the Red River Valley for flood protection, as well as natural resource enhancement, better oversight and regulation of pesticide management in the state, and the clean water legacy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brian Pasco. I'm the Sierra Club's very brand new lobbyist here in Minnesota. I think a lot of you know that we have the largest grassroots environmental organization in the state. We have about 20,000 members in Minnesota. Last year, over 1,500 individuals volunteered with our organization. We're working on sprawl issues, forest issues, clean air, clean water, obviously a lot of the issues that you all will be dealing with. Look forward to meeting all of you that I have. Thank you.
I'm Bill Bond, new executive director of the Minnesota Crop Production Retailers Association. And as you may remember, Craig Sahlstrom, he's the former exec, unfortunately, he passed away a year ago. And our interests, our members are about 500 of them, most of them located in the south, southwest, and western borders, and northwestern borders of Minnesota, are the folks that apply the fertilizers and pesticides to crops and allow Minnesota to be a strong agricultural state that it is. And we're anxious to work with you on environmental concerns and see that we can both promote a strong agriculture and also protect our environment and afford working.
I'm Tony Coles. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And obviously, we'll have a number of issues before you, but the number one issue for us will be the clean water legacy issue that Representative Osmond mentioned previously.
Supporting that issue, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Why start back?
Nelson, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nelson French, Director of Minnesota Consulting Agency. Very interested in the work that this committee does, not only in our agency, but the other agencies that we've had jurisdiction over, and our staff can work together in a very integrated way. I expect to hear more about this session. And our focus, obviously, will be water, the air, and safe land.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bob Meyer. I'm the Director of Legislative Affairs for the Department of Natural Resources. We have a bunch of stuff that we're bringing forward this session. Top one of our priorities is, of course, budget and bonding projects. So then we have a fair share of policy issues that we'll end up in this committee's office. Thank you.
Working on renewable energy and storage, and
Bob Johnson. I represent CropLife America and Syngenta. CropLife America is essentially the pesticide manufacturers, Albert and Freedom on environmental issues. We'll be watching. I'm sorry.
I'll my schedule.
Commissioner Olson of the Red River Watershed Management Board. Some of our main goals this year would be the CREP issue, the impaired water issue, and then bonding, flood damage reduction grants, general fund. We have rain bank program in here, and also the flood damage reduction work that we're looking forward to reporting.
I'm Naomi Barr. I'm also an executive budget
Jim Tenhagen. I work with Minnesota Farmers Union.
Welcome, Jim. Anyone else? Okay. I think that covers us. Thank you very much, members. Anyone have any questions that you'd like to ask? Anything else you want to add to this meeting? Otherwise, we will... Tomorrow, 8:15 sharp, we want to take off. I do have one question to members. How many members drink coffee or would like coffee?
And rolls.
What was the question? And rolls. Oh. You're welcome to bring the rolls. Okay, we'll try to get coffee available to us. They no longer have it available in the building, I believe. We used to be able to go downstairs and purchase some. They took our coffee pot away from us last year, so we're going to try to get that back and see what we can do. We may be able to work something out with the committee on the other side. Representative Gunther's committee meets in room 10, so we maybe get some ability to share with them and make some available for us. So we'll try to work something out. And with that, thank you very much for your participation today. We are adjourned.